Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Gokaldas Exports Q4 FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Binay Sarda from Ernst & Young LLP. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Tanvi. Good morning to all the participants on this call. Before we proceed to the call, let me remind you that the discussion may contain forward-looking statements that may involve known or unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors. It must be viewed in conjunction with our business risks that could cause future results, performance, or achievements to differ significantly from what is expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Please note that we have mailed the results and the presentation, and the same are available on the company's website. In case you have not received the same, you can write to us, and we will be happy to send the same over to you. To take us through the results and answer your questions today, we have the top management of Gokaldas Exports Limited, represented by Mr. Sivaramakrishnan Ganapathi, Managing Director and CEO, and Mr. Sathyamurthy, CFO. We'll start the call with a brief overview of the quarter gone past and then conduct Q&A session. With that said, I'll now hand over the call to Mr. Siva. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Binay. Good morning, everyone. Happy to have you at our earnings call for the financial year of 2022. We are living in special times. Western markets that were recovering from a severe bout of COVID is now teetering with inflation, a byproduct of economic measures taken to combat COVID, and now the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Fresh outbreaks and stringent COVID control measures in Asian countries is holding back the growth in those markets. Shipping logistics stayed disrupted through FY22, raising costs and building an inventory of goods in the supply pipeline. Supply chain disruption increased factor costs, compromising availability and price of raw materials. Cotton, a key agricultural commodity, was also in short supply globally, resulting in an extraordinary price inflation impacting Indian textile industry. Governments worldwide are taking steps to address the situation and hopefully would be able to combat inflation in a concerted manner. Such situations bring in opportunities and threats to various players in the industry, and we are no exception. FY22 ushered in several opportunities in terms of global sourcing moving away from China, driven by cost and political considerations, supplier consolidation towards efficient and well-capitalized players, rapid rollout of vaccination across India, resulting in our supply side bouncing back quickly vis-à-vis other competing countries. Witness the supply side instabilities in key producing countries like China, Vietnam, and Sri Lanka and Pakistan as well. Post-COVID demand surge, particularly in the U.S., led by reopening of the economy and back-to-work programs, strengthening dollar, central government initiatives like PLI scheme supporting new investments in MMF segment, state government initiatives to support job creation by supporting capital investments in labor-intensive sectors, and lastly, bilateral initiatives like FTA with several key countries. Inflation and war volatility remains a key threat to the global economy, and textiles and apparel business is no exception to this concern. In these particularly egregious times, the company has operated with a lot of determination while constantly assessing risks and above all, showing courage. An agile, high-performance, and entrepreneurial organization like ours not just survived but thrived on this disruption. During this period, we seized new opportunities, grabbed market share, expanded our manufacturing footprint, invested in productivity in improvement areas, and emerged as an indispensable part of the global value chain. In FY22, our company reported a total income of 1,801 crores, registering a 47% growth in revenue. Our export revenue grew by 58%, which is in contrast to India's apparel export growth of 30% during the period. we generated an EBITDA margin of 12% for the year, earning 216 crores. Our net profit, adjusted for deferred taxes, was 105 crores, which is a milestone. The company recorded one of the best quarters ever, posting a revenue of 588 crores in Q4, a growth of 58% over previous year, and delivered an EBITDA of about 80 crores, a YOY growth of 109%, and an adjusted PAT of 49 crores. The company generated 117 crores as cash flow from operations. We managed to contain our working capital to 70 days of sales. We unlocked the fixed deposit with the bank to the extent of 132 crores and will unlock the residual amount in FY23. With a singular focus, we unlocked capacity in our existing facilities, upgraded our machinery for productivity, and ensured optimal utilization of capacity while staying razor sharp on customer delivery metrics, emerging as an indispensable part of the global value chain. We commissioned 3 new units in Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, which are ramping up well, and initiated work on a new factory in Madhya Pradesh. In October, we successfully raised equity capital of 300 crores through QIP to support our ambition for growth. Our business segments continued to grow in FY22. Share of casual, outerwear and sportswear segments grew. Our focus on US markets continued to pay off as the market showed the most amount of recovery. European consumption is yet to catch up to pre-pandemic level. We continue to invest in capacity creation and modernization. We have incurred a capital expenditure of 84 crores in the financial year and expect to continue with investments in FY23. With a diversified customer base, we anticipate a higher growth of our non-top 5 accounts. With FTA negotiations between India and UK gaining ground, there is an opportunity to focus on the market going forward. With consumers getting back to work and socializing, woven products could also gain traction. There are headwinds and tailwinds for global trade in FY23, and apparel is no exception. While no one can predict the events that will unfold, we remain optimistic about our order book for FY23. We have good traction for H1. Our service delivery is exceptional and customer satisfaction is high. We continue to see growth opportunities in FY23 despite the expected uncertainty from a peculiar combination of headwinds and tailwinds. I thank you all for listening and would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Gautam Trivedi from Nepean Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I think fantastic set of numbers and very, very impressive. I think not just quarter on quarter, but also year on year. Stellar numbers. Question I have for you is that your EBITDA margins are actually have risen significantly from the fourth quarter of FY21, which was 10.2% to 13.5% for FY22 fourth quarter. Now, I have a question with respect to raw material prices. And to what extent have you been able to navigate cotton raw material prices? I mean, that clearly cotton prices have gone through the roof and other input costs. So I want to get a sense of that. And also in your case, labor is a big element. How much are you seeing pressure on wages as well?
All right. Thank you, Gautam. See, raw material costs have been rising and that's a fact of life for all industries and particularly in the manufacturing sector. So cotton prices have gone up pretty significantly over the last 1 year, but then cotton yarn prices have not risen as much. And when you finally look at woven fabric, the price increases are in the range of, about 10% YOY. So that's because the cotton content in the fabric is only to that extent. So there are other value additions that happen. And we have long-term supply contracts with our suppliers, which help us get better than, the market prices, as well as we have the ability to pass on some of these cost increases back to the customer. And we have been quite successful in doing that through the year. So raw material prices, while they have gone up, both on cotton side as well as on man-made fibers-based fabric, we have been reasonably successful in passing on our cost increases back to our customers. So that explains the raw material cost. As far as other factor costs go, particularly labor, through the year the labor costs remain static. We have once a year inflation-linked wage increase, which we usually see. So we had a wage increase in April 2021. That was about 4.5% at that point in time. And from April 22 onwards, there's another 4.5% wage increase for our labor force. And that will get baked into our costing from April onwards. 4.5% to 5% labor cost increase effectively translates to about 1% of revenue in terms of overall cost increases. We typically tend to offset it by driving a higher productivity. We have always a year-on-year productivity growth. We have usually witnessed a 3 to 4% productivity growth year-on-year. I'm talking of CAGR over the last 5 years, and we have every reason to believe that we will be able to drive that as well. And the weakening rupee also absorbs some of the labor cost inflation and other factor cost inflation. So overall, I think while there may be cost pressure, our ability to push back some of these prices with our suppliers, push it back to the customers or bake it into the costing and absorb it through productivity increases and rupee depreciation, all of which combines us to neutralize some of these effects.
Understood. There's an article in today's Times of India that there's a major issue with respect to the heat, which unexpectedly, you saw the month of March was the hottest month of March ever. Month of April was the hottest April ever in India since the records began in 1901 or whatever. Point I'm going to make is that with respect to that heat, does that impact the cotton crop as well, or is it only grains? I mean, would you know that?
So, I don't track cotton as an agricultural commodity or, cotton growing, because we only buy fabric. So we are far removed from cotton as an agricultural commodity. I don't believe that it's going to impact as much, but then I'm no expert on it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think these are really fantastic numbers, and the stocks obviously reacted very well, and it's done very well. So, all the best, and thank you for answering my questions.
Thanks, Gautam.
Thank you. The next question is from Pulkit Singhal from Dalmus Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, and congrats on a excellent set of numbers and performance.
Just
on the costing bit itself, I'm just trying to understand the P&L a bit better, because it seems quite different from the other quarterly P&L. Q1Q, we see a revenue increase, but we've seen almost a 4% gross margin contraction, or 3.5%. Whereas your costing, employee cost and other expense are all lower than the previous quarter. So if you can help understand how does that happen while we have a revenue increase, but the costs are lower, at least on the operating cost.
Okay. So, when it comes to gross margin, it's difficult to, since we make a very wide variety of products, our gross margin does not necessarily translate proportionately to the EBITDA margin. The reason is that depending on the product type that we make, the material content could be very different. So if I produce more of outerwear, which is what we usually produce in certain quarters, so for instance, this quarter we had a little higher volume of outerwear, we typically tend to have a higher material content in our revenue and in our cost. So it has a tendency to show a lower gross margin, but the manufacturing margin that we get from such products are usually higher, and hence we make a better EBITDA margin finally on those products. You know, I have said this before in my calls as well. So a good way to imagine this would be, think of us making a cotton shirt where the raw material for the shirt is, you know, the fabric is 100 rupees and I'm pricing the shirt at 200. I'm just giving you a very macroeconomics here. And my cost of manufacturing is, let us say, 75 rupees. I make 25 rupees on that particular shirt. Now, if, let us say, I'm given an order to produce a linen shirt where the cost of fabric goes to 200, but I am given a price of, let us say, 325 or something like that, my cost of manufacturing still remains 75 rupees and I can earn another 50 rupees per shirt. But, you know, if you look at the gross margin statistics, which will be 200 on, 325, that's the cost. So 125 on 325, it will look that my gross margin is lower, but my net realization will be higher. So there is a bit of this conundrum going on in our P&L because of the product variety that we handle. Coming to the employee cost, what we usually do, since we have a very large employee base, by the way, we have 32,000 employees now, our employee benefits and retirement provisions are made in the first four quarters and first three quarters, and then based on the actual actuarial valuation, we adjust it in the fourth quarter. So this time we got certain provisions which we had to write back from the previous quarter because we had actually made higher than expected provisions. So to that extent, you know, the employee cost came down, particularly because we made higher provisions in Q2, Q3. So that is, that's the reason why our EBITDA margin is slightly overstated in Q4 and employee costs may look a little lower.
Right. But what about other, so what would be the right employee cost to look at adjusted for this provision? Because I know you're scaling up as well simultaneously, right?
So the total employee cost, which is the factory labor cost plus the overhead plus HO, complete employee cost, it's a good metric, would be about 30%.
30% of sales, okay. And in terms of the other expense, that also is lower. Why this is surprising to me is because you are also, you know, expanding and you have new units coming up. So typically one expects that cost should go up Q on Q. So that's what I'm just trying to understand.
See, other expenses normally accounts for the manufacturing expenses and the freight, you know, the supply chain costs also reflected there. So technically, because of the three new units have come up, those costs are included, you know, when you really look at it. If you look at it Q on Q, there was some air freight element was there in Q3. And between Q3 and Q4, you could see some variance. But otherwise, it is the normal expenses which is incurred for the manufacturing as well as our supply chain costs and administrative costs are grouped under other expenses.
Okay. This last question, I mean, in terms of the working capital, very good improvement. The debtor days has come from 50 days to 28 days. I mean, this has never happened before. So what should be the right debtor days to look at going ahead? Is it 28 or will it be higher?
Yeah, so the one factor is that this is also influenced because of the supply chain disruption. So if you really look at in our inventory days are slightly higher. So the finished goods to the extent we carry almost about close to 10 days. Otherwise, you know, when I really look at it combined between inventory and debtors, we really work reasonably well. Our debtors numbers, you should really look at is around 25 to 28 is a reasonable number.
25 to 28 should be how we should look at going ahead. So this is a reset, this is a one-time reset which has happened from 50 days to 25? I mean, because in the past we never had 25. I mean.
Yes, we have done, in fact, we have gone back and we have done also the participate in the early payment program. We have done that to bring down our inventory, data's holding.
Understood. Thank you. Thank you very much. And all the rest.
Thank you. Participants, we request you to limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from the line of Jayant Mamania from Care PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations for a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sir, our volume in 2020 was around 25 million garments and in 2022 it is around 22.6, almost 10% lower.
Yes.
But our turnover is higher by 35%. So how would you attribute this to product mix and the rise in raw material price?
So the The reason for that is that we are focusing more and more on high-value garments. So when I make outerwear, today outerwear is 41% of my total turnover. Outerwear is a more complex garment. It's equivalent to 10 of the regular garments that we produce. So you know, when you look at the number of pieces we produce, it is misleading in many ways. Because if, you know, we take one outerwear and add it to one shirt, let us say, it just becomes two garments. But effectively, an outerwear could be 10x that of a shirt in terms of production effort. So you know, don't go just by the number of pieces shipped. It's just a direct, it's an indicator of how we are progressing and how we are growing. But then the composition of that also matters. As you can see that, you know, higher ASP garments are, you know, forming an increasing proportion of what we sell and ship.
Sir, if you can quantify, what would be the quantum of sales that is attributed to the rise in raw material prices?
Rise in raw material prices will be about 4% or 4.5%.
Okay. Sir, our margin Q4 have gone up to 13.5%. So what would be the sustainable margin going forward?
So as I said earlier, the margin of 13.5% is slightly inflated because of a little lower provisioning for employee benefits and retirees in the previous two quarters. So realistic, it is overestimated to the extent of 1%. So realistic estimate is, you know, of our performance for Q4 is 12.5%. We would like to maintain that going forward, but there are a few cost pressures that that we will see going forward. For one, it is the wage increases that we will be experiencing from April onwards. That is a 5% wage increase on account of dearness allowance increase as per government notification, which has a 1% impact on the EBITDA. We will of course offset it with higher productivity. So I would reckon that overall for the year we should be at par or slightly better than the FY22 levels. That's what we are gunning for in the future. We will have to ratchet up our productivity to offset some of these cost increases as we go along, which we are working on. We will also have an additional cost for employee stock options, which we recently issued. I'm not factoring in that because that is a separate Black-Scholes calculation, and it will come in as a one-time item for the years for the next 3 years because it's a 3-year stock vesting program. But it's a non-cash item. It is it will not have an impact on our free cash flow, but it's an accounting accounting cost that we will have to take. So there will be a bit of that. I'm not factoring that at the moment in the calculation. Barring that, we should try to hold on or improve our margins is the effort that we are putting in.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Dhaval Shah from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes. Hello, Dhaval.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Hi. So there are two questions from my side. So first is, given the increased heat and we are in labor intensive industry, do we see any impact on the yield, on the productivity side?
When you say yield meaning output per person or something like that?
Productivity, yes.
As I said, historically, we have seen about 3% productivity gain YOY. So we have every reason to believe that journey will continue at least in the near future.
Got it. Okay. And so second question is on the price increase which we would have negotiated with our customers. Now in this quarter, as we see, we have increased our EBITDA margin quarter on quarter. So is there a large part of the increase has come in the current quarter and then the further price increase, for the further inflation which we would be seeing, would that be again getting expected in the next round of negotiation, which might happen maybe 2 quarters down the line? Can you just help us understand this entire, you know, our practice of renegotiation, and when would it get reflected in the numbers?
So the way we price our orders are that when we get a spec for a particular garment, we go back and look at what are the factor costs. So what is the fabric cost, what are the trim costs, what are the packaging costs, etc., etc. What's the cost of manufacturing and all that. Develop a costing, secure the prices from our suppliers, and then quote a price to our customer, close the price, and back-to-back secure the prices from our suppliers so that we are not exposed to any price variations once an order is booked. So that's how we plan our business. So when we take an order, we know exactly what my cost structure is. I have already locked in my raw material costs at that point in time, and have made my determination on what should be my profit margin on the particular product. So increasing raw material costs, we have by and large been able to push it back to our customers. So to that extent, there is a price increase. The revenue growth is largely driven by volume growth, volume adjusted for, you know, the complexity of the garment. So we calculate on based on number of minutes rather than just number of pieces, so that how you know, what is the total work content which goes up. And we have seen about 34% volume growth in the FY22 versus FY21. And the rest of it is the price increase or the realization increase, which partially could be because of the raw material cost increase and also because of the mix of the product that has changed. Does that clarify?
Yes, so sorry to interrupt, but when you say we lock the raw material, so like you today, you get an inquiry, then you give your quotation. So for how many days or does this quotation remain open or valid? Then the client comes back to you, number one. Number two, the quotation would be for a certain volume, for a certain number of, so maybe for a one batch of order, or because if you're entering into a yearly contract or a 6-month contract, you would not be going and booking, would you be booking the entire fabric for the next 1 year duration of the contract or the entire life of the contract? Otherwise, see, if it was such back-to-back, then raw material would never be a problem in your kind of business. So I just want to understand these two things.
So when we get an order, we typically tend to get a quotation which is valid at least for a couple of months from our suppliers. So we lock them in for that period. If we go back to them placing the order, that price point is valid, you know, is enforceable. And then we go ahead and secure the business from our customers, and then back-to-back close it with our suppliers. So the price quotations that we get from our suppliers is locked in, and we have enough time to get back to them and close it and hold them accountable to the prices given to us. So as you said, to
that 6 months, like for example, if you book say a particular quantity, so that quantity would be deliverable for what, 3 months, 6 months, how would that be?
So there are both kinds of businesses. A large proportion of our orders are shorter duration rather than very, very long duration of 6 months, 1 year. We usually have a turnaround time of 3 months, by which time we will have to give turn around the product. We usually tend to have, we will, if there is an order which is, say, a long term, that is, you know, continuous supply over a 6 month period, a generic commodity kind of product, then we tend to negotiate appropriately with the suppliers. Also keep in mind that a lot of our raw materials are also nominated suppliers. So we get into a three-way discussions between ourselves, our buyers, which is a large customer, as well as the fabric suppliers. And the fabric supplier's price point becomes binding on the customer as well, since it's a three-way dialogue. So there is a lot of these contractual safeguards that we have in place, which allows us to price things in to our customers.
Thank you. In interest of time, I would request all the participants to please limit their questions to two per participant. The next question is from the line of Akhil Arogi from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Hi. So regarding, you know, what you had mentioned about the revenue growth, which is based mostly on the volume growth and not that much on the price increase. So going ahead, you know, would the quarterly run rate of revenue be around 500 crores only for FY23?
No, I think we've, you know, we should be able to do better than that, better than the 500 crore run rate. I think we, in the fourth quarter, we did about 588, right? So we are, you know, we are also adding capacity as we speak. So we are, you know, we are intending to grow our growth, you know, our growth momentum will continue. As of now, we do have a very good visibility for H1. We have order book, which is reasonably robust for H1. And keep in mind that, you know, for Indian garment suppliers, Q3 and Q4 are when we produce garments for spring and summer for the Western world. And that's the peak season for us. So Q1 and Q2 usually has got a smaller dip, small dip, and then Q3 and Q4 picks up pretty strongly. By and large, we have insulated our own business from seasonal vagaries and, you know, seasonality, as we do a lot of outerwear in the first and second quarter to pull up the slack. But our revenue growth in FY23 is assured. So we will have a growth over 22. We are seeing a good traction for our business as well.
Okay. And so what is the, since you mentioned a robust order book, what is the current order book right now?
So I have, you know, we normally don't give out those numbers, but I have a fairly full capacity booked for H1.
Okay, thank you. And just to squeeze in two more questions, since you mentioned the company has grabbed market share, so how much, what is the current market share and how much has it increased by?
So, you know, market share has to be looked at slightly differently. You know, we tend to look at it in a far more granular fashion. So what's my market share with, say, Gap as a customer? What's my market share with Walmart as a customer? And so on and so forth, correct? And within that, again, which subsegment that I grab. So we tend to look at it differently. Otherwise, if you look at all India exports, FY22 was about 16 billion. Out of 16 billion, we did about 1,800 crores, which is what? About 250 million. So from that perspective, our market share within India's apparel exports is tiny, 250 million on a 16 billion. So I see the opportunity landscape to be immense, and there is enough potential for people like us to grow.
Right. And my last question is regarding the CapEx that you're doing in FY23, you know, 160 crores and 120 crores. So out of that, how much is going to be the debt funding?
About 75 crores we intend to take over a period of next 2 years.
75 crores over the next 2 years?
Right. FY23 and
24. Okay, fine. Okay, that's it from my end. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Venkat Samala from Tata AMC. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks a lot for the opportunity. A very good job done on both the top line and the bottom line side.
Thank you, Venkat.
Sir, my first question is, you know, there were some articles going around wherein Gokaldas won on the PLI scheme. So could you give some more color as to, you know, which products are we manufacturing? What could be the outlay and the benefits that we entail to receive from the government side?
Okay, so you know, we applied for a PLI scheme. There was scheme 2, which is you know, for 100 crore capex, we could produce garments which fall under the MMF product category, and the government had specified 40 specific HS codes which qualify. The products which fall under those HS codes would qualify for PLI incentive. So the investment is work in progress. The factory is under construction, which is in Madhya Pradesh. We intend to produce, you know, the products which fall under those HS codes. it will take at least a year before the factory starts becoming able to produce and generate the targeted revenue. The target revenue for a 100 crore investment as per PLI scheme is 200 crores of revenue falling under the specific HS code. And for that, in year one, the government will give a 11% PLI incentive. And for year two, they would expect a 25% growth over the year one level. So 200 going up to 250, and for the incremental revenue, they'll give 9%. So it's a sliding scale, 11, 9, 7, 5, and so on and so forth for 5 years. And incremental 25% gets the benefit. That's the kind of broad PLI scheme construct. By the time we actually realize the PLI revenue, PLI incentives, and we qualify for PLI scheme, it will be FY25. So it's a bit way off at the moment, but the notion here is that it brings in the ability to Indian manufacturers to get into MFF-based products, incentivize Indian manufacturers to produce more of man-made fiber-based garments. The raw material ecosystem for that is pretty weak at the moment. It needs to be established. We already produce garments under these HS codes. We do have the technical capability to do so. So we are, in a sense, a little better qualified to take advantage of it. But it's something which will take a bit of time before we start seeing the benefits of PLI.
Right, right, right. Sir, and just as a short follow-up to that, so as you mentioned, then the incremental revenue over that 200 CR of 25% on which you will get the PLI benefit furthermore as the time horizon extends. So do we need to further keep investing into this to realize benefits beyond that 11% in the first year?
So we may have some investments going on. So based on that first 100 crores itself, you know, we can produce much more than 200 crores. So I don't see way too much investments going forward to continue to realize that PLI benefit. It may be some notional, marginal investment.
Understood. And one last question is, sir, when we look at Europe's share of our revenue mix, that has been consistently coming down, right? And that is despite the fact that, you know, historically also we were over-indexed towards US. So I mean, how do we see this moving forward?
Good question. So I see the trend reversing going forward. The reason why we have focused on US was manifold. One, US is a large homogeneous market, so we get very good run sizes and hence a better profitability as compared to Europe, which is fragmented. Two, when we go to Europe, we tend to compete with Bangladesh, which goes duty-free into Europe, as opposed to ourselves, where we go with a 10 to 11% duty. So we have a duty disadvantage going into Europe. So clearly, you know, the margins catering to Europe is not not as great. And third, post-COVID, US saw the best bounce back of the economy, unlike Europe, which continued to stagnate in calendar 2021. And now again, Europe will go slow because of the war in Europe. So all of these reasons, we focused more and more on US, and we were opportunistic. We were also very conscious of our bottom line and focused on the larger markets for us. Now, going forward with FTA expected with UK by the year end, and FTA negotiations which could start with Europe in calendar 23, it presents a good opportunity for us. We are looking at, you know, slightly reversing the European trend and going a bit more focused on Europe in anticipation of FTAs coming in play.
Right, right. Sure, sir. That's helpful. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We move to the next question from the line of Yash Bajaj from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Yash. Thank you.
Sir, I just wanted to understand what would be a mix in terms of cotton and man-made fiber apparel.
Okay. So cotton is about 60% of our total, you know, fiber mix. We will also have linen and viscose adding up to another 10-12% to it, and the rest will be polyester, nylon, and others.
Okay, okay. And I mean, just to understand, like, how different would be the costing in terms of all these three type of apparels?
So what happens is that we, depending on the fabric specked out between us and the customer, we tend to factor in what is the cost of the particular raw materials, the fabric and the other trims associated with it, and then we calculate the cost and bake it into our costing. So it becomes a pass through to the customer. So the costings could vary from what the product type is, what kind of blend it is, and so on and so forth. But for us, it just is a pass through.
Okay. Okay. So like just to understand for me, there's no difference as such in terms of that because it's just a pass through.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And so coming to the CapEx side, how much I remember, I think the Q2 call we were deciding whether to make any CapEx in Bangladesh. So what's the status with that?
Right. We are working on the Bangladesh project. We anticipate that we should have some amount of output coming from Bangladesh in the second quarter. We are still contemplating between leasing a factory versus building our own. Building our own takes time, so it will delay the commissioning of the project, and it will take it to FY24. So we are thinking of starting off with lease, in which case we may not have as much of capex. So it's all work in progress as we speak.
Okay, okay. And with the MP project.
MP project is under construction. We believe that it should be completed by end of June or early July, post which it will start with pilot runs and then start ramping up over the next 6 months or 9 months.
Okay, so we can expect a full ramp up after 9 months.
Correct.
Of MP. Okay, okay. That's all from my side. Thank you so much, sir, and congratulations on a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunjan Kabra from Niveshaay. Please go ahead.
Sir, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations for a brilliant set of numbers.
Thank you.
Sir, wanted to understand, like, with production issues in Sri Lanka and Pakistan, are we getting more order inquiries because of that also, which is strengthening our order book?
Okay, so Sri Lanka does a lot more knits and intimate wear. We don't do that, those products at the moment. So while we intend getting into knits going forward, at the moment we are not as much in competition with Sri Lanka and for that matter with Pakistan. So no, answer is no. Those are not benefiting us in particular. But we do tend to benefit from COVID in China, COVID-related close downs in southern Vietnam. So those benefits have come to us as we make a lot more complex products and we are more in competition with suppliers in those countries.
Okay, okay. Sir, also the MP project also, is it a part of the PLI scheme or will we be establishing a new plant for PLI?
No, the MP project. The MP project is part of the PLI scheme.
It is a part of the
PLI. Right.
Okay. Thank you so much. And all good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Sidwa from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity and congratulations for a very good set of numbers. So my first question pertains to the quarter-on-quarter growth. So we already had a very high base in the third quarter and reporting a 12% growth on that. So I just wanted to understand what will be the rough price hike and the volume growth for the current quarter?
You're talking of Q4 or you're asking Q4.
From Q3 to Q4, the 12% Q on Q growth. Well, how much will be the price-led growth in that?
In terms of realization, it's almost about 17%.
Realization, okay, okay, okay.
So
volumes have kind of thoda dipped this quarter? Because of the higher outer wear,
linear Q3 to Q4.
Oh, sorry. That what I talked about is Q4 over Q4. That's YoY only I talked about. You want Q3 linear?
We will get back to you with your answer. Just bear with us.
Sure.
We'll
Sure. And sir, second question is on the Karnataka plant, which we had commissioned in the previous quarter. If I'm not wrong, that plant contributed close to around 16 crores in the previous quarter. So what will be the contribution in the current quarter from those plants?
So we commissioned three units, two in Karnataka and one in Tamil Nadu, Krishnagiri.
Correct.
And the contribution from all these three new plants put together in the quarter four was close to 40 crores.
Close to 40 crores. Okay, okay. And the capacity utilization in the current quarter will be trending more than 50-60% for these plants?
For those plants, yes, it will be around that level.
Oh, okay, sir. That's great. And also, just one follow-up question from one of the previous participants. If I just look at the last 4 years, our growth CAGR has been close to around 15% from FY18 to 22. But that is mainly driven by our realization growth. So going forward, what should one kind of factor in? Will we expect similar kind of a mix, like around 14% would be realization growth and single-digit volume growth? Or going forward, volume growth would be close to around double-digit and a lower realization growth?
Here is the conundrum, right? The way I see it, my volume growth this year was 34% over last year, of course. Last year, albeit, was a COVID-impacted year, FY21. The reason is that we don't look at piece per piece, each piece as our volume, as the piece work content in each piece could be very, very, very different. So yes, you can assume that the volume growth will be there. If you treat volume as unique pieces of garments, the volume growth will be about 10% or 12%, and the realization will be higher. But that's simply because the mix, till the mix keeps changing in favor of more and more outerwear, you will find that realization per piece will keep going up faster.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. We'll move to the next question from the line of Dixit Doshi from Whitestone Financial Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just one question. So, as you mentioned that it is not prudent to look at the number of pieces and also the ASP changes with the product mix. So, considering whatever capacity you have and considering the best possible product mix, what kind of top line we can do with the current capacity, and also considering the Tamil Nadu MP plant, what kind of revenue we can do?
Okay, current capacity utilization, that is in Q4, we were at full capacity utilization. Based on our current capacity, we may see some incremental utilization coming from our three new factories that we set up in the second half of last year. So they are on a ramp up. They have almost ramped up to 50-60% levels, and there is an incremental ramp up we will get. So we can have that incremental revenue coming in from there. So that's the growth. MP will start contributing revenue only from the third quarter of next year, of this year, that is FY23, and it will start slow, and then it will start ramping up Q on Q. The Tamil Nadu new unit, which is the knit fabric processing unit, which will get commissioned by end of FY23. So really, strictly speaking, its own contribution will start coming in from FY24. So this year, the growth will come from some more incremental capacity unlocked from our existing factory. The incremental growth of the three units we set up in H2 of FY22 and the Bhopal unit, which will be contributing as we go forward. We'll also, based on demand supply situation, we'll also be looking at additional capacities to be set up, garment capacities to be set up in this year. That we will keep announcing as and when plans are firmed up. We may also have some revenue coming in from Bangladesh towards the second half of the year based on what we are working on. So all put, there is decent revenue growth that we are expecting. It will all pan out in the quarters ahead, more so in the second half of the year.
So Just one small thing. So typically, how much would be the asset turn, whatever capex we do?
So typically, the revenue will be 4 to 4.5 times that of the capex that we make when it is fully ramped up. So if I invest 100 crores, I can expect a revenue of 400 to 450 crores once the capex, once the factory is commissioned and the factory then ramps up to full capacity.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Chhoda from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity, sir. Basically, I was looking at this presentation in that you have given this like the outerwear proportion. Basically, the ASPs beyond 450 has increased from 59% to around 88% in FY22. So,
yes.
What has actually contributed this change in that entire thing? Like the ASPs have been significantly higher. What has been contributing to that?
So you know the higher proportion of outerwear in our product suite, even the other garments, sportswear, casuals, we have tended to focus on higher ASP products. That's the reason why our mix is weighted towards higher value products. So we picked 450 because that's the average price of woven garments exported out of India. And a vast majority of our output is at a much higher rate. For example, in FY22, our realization per piece is in excess of 700 rupees. So about 738 rupees. So it's on an upward trend, and that is because of the product types that we have focused on.
Okay. And sir, on the capex front, like in FY22, could you provide us a breakup of the capex, like which capacities, how much you have like invested, and probably also similarly the FY23, we are planning how you would be distributing that among the different capacities?
So for FY23, for all the new plants, we invested close to around 22 crores. In the existing plants, for the capacity expansion and for the modernization, we invested around 18 crores. Then we also have invested around 30 crores in two of the new projects which are going on. One in Bhopal, almost about 19 crores, and for the fabric processing unit in Tamil Nadu, about 11 crores is invested. That is as far as FY22 is concerned. FY23, our investment plan is about 160 crores. It includes about normal capex in our existing plants to the extent of 20 crores. For the new projects in Bhopal and for new addition, we estimated around 70 crores. Another 70 crores is likely to be invested for our fabric processing unit in Tamil Nadu.
Thank you. We'll move to the next question from the line of Ankit Pandey from Quant Money Managers. Please go ahead. Ankit, your line has been unmuted. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Thank you. Many congratulations on a very good quarter. My question would be, especially given the estimations from some of the proxy advisors, what would be the approximate ESOP charge that we'll have to take in FY23?
I think we will, we'll do the final calculation based on how much of ESOP are being handed out to the employees. So we've had a board meeting, we have finalized it, and once that calculation is made, we will share with you based on what is the quantum of ESOPs being allocated. So bear with us for some more time, we will get back.
Sure. And my other questions, various questions are by and large answered. So thanks very much, and I wish you the very best.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prerna Jhunjhunwala from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on good set of numbers, sir, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to ask questions.
Hi, Prerna. Thank you.
Thank you. So, the first question is that in your opening remarks, you mentioned that you've invested in productivity improvement areas. Could you highlight some of the initiatives taken by you to help us understand how the improvements are coming in?
Sure. So you know, in all our existing factories, we have added a lot of machines to automate our production. So several such investments have taken place within our existing factory. So you know, machineries which can which can automate collars, attachments, cuff attachments, belt pockets, you know, many such investments. Even we have upgraded our cutting and fusing machines. We have upgraded our embroidery machines, printing machines. So those things will actually give a higher throughput, and some of these newer machines have a lower cost of operations as well. So it will indeed help us in getting productivity up going forward.
Okay, that is helpful, sir. So this will add to the 3% improvement in productivity that you've been...
Correct.
Okay, understood. And sir, next question is on the inflationary trend that you are witnessing right now. In such inflationary trend, also your suppliers are binding by the quote that you receive for 6 months. Or how is the industry working in current scenario? Because prices are moving up regularly, and how are the customers taking it forward? Are they looking into product mix change to manage the supply, increased cost, or how things are happening?
Yes, indeed, right? So if, let us say, one fiber price goes up pretty significantly, automatically it will lead to fiber blending and all of that, right? So, you know, rather than use pure cotton, you will use cotton viscose and so on and so forth. So a bit of that happens. The woven fabric price increase is not as high in relation to cotton price increase as compared to, say, a knit fabric price, because it will have a higher cotton increase, and you know, the yarn price increase will be much higher. So from translation, from a percentage increase of cotton to a percentage increase in fabric, it comes down quite a bit, as there are several other value-adding pieces in the production of fabric itself. So you know, computing all of that, and the fact that end consumer, that our customer is aware that the fabric prices have to go up, we will tend to price in the higher fabric cost. The customers in turn, or the brands in turn, are reacting by increasing prices of apparel as well. So on an average, we find that the US apparel prices have also gone up thanks to inflation. It's about 6% or 7% increase we're finding in apparel price increase as well in the US market. So it is getting passed on to the end consumer, which is what is the most important trend to track. So if the end consumer is paying for all of this, then I think we are good. The raw material prices need not be absorbed by the value chain. It can be passed on to the end consumer. So far, we have been able to do that. Brands have been also able to do that. Some of it may have to be absorbed by the value chain, which can happen only through productivity improvements or, say, currency depreciation, etc., which is also getting done to an extent. But largely from our standpoint, we are pushing back the pricing, which then gets pushed back to the end consumer. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir, almost. And sir, my last question
sorry
is on...
Sorry to interrupt. In interest of time, I would request you to please come back in the queue or email your question. I would request all the participants to limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Devesh Kayal from Omkara Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so what would be our share of autumn and winter apparel in our total revenues and in FY22, and what was it in FY21?
So FY21 it was 37%, it is going up to some 40-odd% now.
Okay, and so what would be our tax payout in FY23? What are we expecting?
You say tax payout?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are getting into regular tax, and for the current year, FY23, the effective tax rate will be at 25.17%.
Okay, so that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikas Kasturi from Focus Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, sir. So my question was regarding your working capital days. So since the time you took over, it has reduced dramatically from about 108 days to 75 days. So is this a reflection of your growing importance in the supply chain of your customers? That is the only question I had, sir.
So a portion of it is because we have negotiated better payment terms with the customers. So we have brought down receivable days. We have also got better terms with our suppliers, which has also increased our, the number of days that we get to pay to our raw material suppliers. And we have also managed inventory tightly. However, I should say that in FY22, our inventory management was not as effective simply because of a lot of logistical challenges that we had. So to an extent, one could argue that we can operate at a lower working capital cycle than what we currently have if only there was a bit of stability in the logistics supply chain. We, for instance, for imported materials, we started importing material at least 1 to 2 months in advance just to account for volatility in supply timings, etc. So ships were getting delayed, containers were not being found. So there were so many other challenges resulting in us having to keep more raw material inventory and oftentimes even FG inventory.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nishit Shah from Ambika FinCap. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on an extremely good set of numbers and thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Nishit.
Shiva, my question is a broad vision. You are one of the largest listed garment exporter from India. There is an unlisted company, but on a 3-year, 5-year roadmap, now we are on a run rate of about 2,500-2,600 crores a year. So when do we see $1 billion and beyond $1 billion and benchmarking with the global players? Could you just give some color on that?
Very good question. We need to keep up our growth momentum going forward, and for that we need to keep growing at a strong clip. So notwithstanding short-term headwinds the inflation in the US or war in Europe, which I all think at most can impact the markets by a year or so, I think the longer term prospect for this industry is pretty robust, and hence our ability to keep growing will be good. So we should we are clearly setting our sights on that long term growth. We would of course like to grow to 5,000 crores, 7,500 crores, as you mentioned, and keep growing. Time frame, I think, we would like to do at the earliest, I would say, but then, there are a lot of short-term challenges that I see in the market. But overall, we are reasonably on track to keep up our growth percentage or growth momentum.
Yeah, just to add on to that, these China plus one factor and now the COVID in China and also in Vietnam, should be helping us in making inroads into newer variety of garments, high margin product, as well as with sticky customers, which was earlier little difficult for an Indian garment manufacturer. So how do you react on that?
So you're right in that. We tend to produce more complex garments, which are typically produced in China, Vietnam and other places. We are seeing traction on some of those product types, and increasingly more and more of the Western buyers are shifting that to India and players like us. So we do tend to compete a lot with them. We do tend to have a good track record of delivering. So I see that as a bigger opportunity, because costs in China, and for that matter China and Vietnam, are only going up and up and up to an unrealistic level. So much so that, India can compete very effectively with them. The only drawback we currently seem to have is the fabric ecosystem. Most of the fabric for such products we are still importing from Taiwan, Korea, China, etc. at the moment. But even then, if we are seeing a good order book from which were hitherto being produced there, it means that the consumers are seeing some value out of India. So we do have a good opportunity in that space.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investment. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir, to giving me this opportunity. Whether this margin of financial year 22 are sustainable at this higher cost of cotton?
So, Sinha, there are all kinds of forces. So, there is a higher cost of raw materials, which is not just cotton, but even MMF, right? There is a higher cost of wages, this inflation. And you know, the trick is, how much can you pass it back through to your customers? So if you know higher cotton price effectively has led to about 10% increase in higher cotton fabric price. Now 10% fabric price increase means to me in revenue terms it is about 4% increase in pricing. Now if I'm able to pass it all through the customers, then I don't have a margin impact. If I'm able to pass zero to the customer, then I take a 4% hit. Now, the reality is that so far we have been able to pass most of it back to the customers. Wage cost increase, we you know, would have a 1% impact on EBITDA, which we intend to offset it through productivity improvement. So we will not have as much of an issue there. And, you know, any other cost that we end up absorbing in the mutual negotiation, we do have some relief coming in the form of rupee depreciation. So if the rupee depreciates by about 3-4%, then I think, you know, a bit of our cost increases can be offset there. So that's how we look at the business. Our endeavor is to like, the, you know, to be able to sustain the EBITDA margin. In the longer run, I continue to maintain that I will be able to improve my EBITDA margin by 1.5% in a 2-2.5-3 year time frame, simply because there will be an operating leverage as we grow in scale and productivity, there will be some benefits. In the short term, you know, random cost increases or sharp cost increases may have some negative impact in a quarter or two, but you know, overall for the year, I think we should be on track for FY23.
Thank you very much. Nice explanation and wishing you all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bismuth Nayak from RW Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. So what would be the EBITDA margin profile for all the product categories, casual, outer, bottom and sportswear?
So we usually have a bit higher EBITDA margin for outerwear. You know, it will be about 1%, 1.5% higher. And, you know, the casual wear will be proportionately slightly lower, you know, but more or less, you know, you could assume, you know, if 12.5% is the average EBITDA margin, you know, outerwear will be +1.5%, the others will be -0.5% or -0.75%.
And one more thing on number of pieces shipped. So how, I did not understand how do you compute this thing. So how is the volume computation done? You said something on outerwear number of pieces.
So number of pieces are total number of pieces. So you know, if I ship 10 jackets and 10 shirts, I'm counting as 20 garments shipped because that's number of pieces, correct? But a jacket could take, let us say, you know, 200 minutes to produce. Yeah, that's the embedded, let's say, effort to make it. A shirt, let's say, takes 20 minutes to produce. A jacket is, say, 10 times that of shirt. Now, this depends on the type of jacket and type of shirt. So, you know, please take it with that caveat. So, every product is different since we make a wide variety. So, if you look at, let's say, a t-shirt making company, the bulk of the product will be round neck t-shirt or polo neck t-shirt with the same level of effort. So, we can define capacity in terms of number of units as the units are more or less standardized. Unfortunately, in our case, we are making wide variety of garments which have got humongous amount of, you know, delta in terms of product complexity. This is why, you know, defining capacity in number of pieces becomes a bit of a challenge. And that's the reason also why the realization per piece is vastly different. So between complex, so you know, we have products which are $20 products as well, and we have products which are like $5. So the variety is huge.
Understood, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Upganlawar from InvesQ Investment Advisor. Please go ahead.
The opportunity. You explained in the earlier part of the call that this conundrum between the percentage gross margins and the net realization that you would have. We understood that. Just to understand, is it difficult to pass on the absolute, maybe rupee kind of change in the raw material cost in terms of the increase in the price of the final product in terms of your net realization? I mean, I'm trying to understand whether on absolute basis your margins can stay protected and you can pass it on. Because you also said that when you contract with the customer, you do a back-ended contract with the supplier. And to what extent the inflation can be managed in, to this extent, in this kind of a formula that you have?
So our endeavor is to pass 100% back to the customers, correct? Of course, we will negotiate with our suppliers the best possible price since we have long-term supply contract and then pass it back to the customers. Now, most of the instances we do tend to get away by passing to the customers because we also have, we also bring in the customers in to nominate the fabric supplier and nominate the pricing of the fabric as well. So it becomes a three-way understanding between ourselves, the customers, as well as the raw material supplier. And fabric is the largest raw material, by the way. So from that perspective, we do tend to lock in the pricing with the customers' clear understanding. So it is largely passed through. In the event there is a small amount where we lose out in negotiation, we tend to make up with higher productivity and other parameters. But by and large, over 90% of the cases, we have been able to pass it in full.
Okay, got you. If I can ask one more question on the ESOP cost, you said the final, the quantities and the value is still to be finalized, but can you give us some direction as to is it going to be say 1% of the overall capital or something like that, or is it going to be a higher amount that you think?
Well, I think roughly ballpark wise, and the final cost is, I don't have it yet on my table, but it's a little over 5 crores a quarter.
Okay, so 20 crores a year. Okay.
Yes.
Fine, sir.
But keep in mind that this is an accounting charge. It does not impact free cash flows as there is no actual cash payout. And it does give us a tax shield. So in that sense, from a free cash flow standpoint, it actually increases the free cash flow.
Yeah, I understood that. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mithun Aswath from Kiva Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just I think a follow-up from most of the questions is, you put up three units this year. What was the capex on that? And you referred to that the asset turnover is typically around 5 to 5.5 times. So just wanted to get an indication of where we are with those new plants in terms of annual run rate and what run rate we would have done in Q4.
Okay, so the three units that we put up in the second half of last year, one, two were in Karnataka, one in Tamil Nadu. The full capacity run rate for the three units put together would be about 220 crores once they reach the full capacity, 220 crores per year. So once they reach the full capacity level, so about say 55 crores per quarter. Currently, we may be at about 60% of those levels in those three units all put together. So there is some residual growth that we can anticipate from those units. The capex for those units were
for the year in FY22, we incurred almost close to 22 crores. Some more investment is happening in FY23.
Got it. But that refers to maybe almost a 10x sort of asset turnover, right?
No, that is correct. So some more capex, he said, will happen in 23. The reason in that particular instance is because some of it is also leased capacity. So we did not do a full greenfield investments. We also leased some machinery. So in that particular instance, we may get a higher asset turnover. But then the OPEX cost will be a little higher because we did, one of the factories came with some amount of machinery with it. So when you go and lease capacities, you will have to take what is available rather than, the way you want it to be done.
Right. Just one more broader question is, how competitive has India become? Is this a more short-term opportunity because of COVID and the you know, the business moving to India, or what has led to this sort of change of supply happening here? Because this, once COVID goes away, do you think Vietnam and China will be back if they are more competitive? So just wanted to understand from that standpoint whether the labor cost is cheaper here, or what is the driver for us to gain more market share?
So apparel is labor intensive. And if you look at the labor cost in China, it's in excess of about $350 to $370 per month. Vietnam is closer to $250. In places like Ho Chi Minh City and Hanoi, it will be even higher. So the labor cost is high. In India, it is about $160 per month. So even adjusted for productivity, assuming that the Chinese labor or Vietnamese labor are more productive, Indian costs are still lower, you know, than those places. So naturally, there is a, you know, cost arbitrage which is sought out by large brands as they seek to buy more and more garments from cheaper and cheaper locations. So this is point number one. The second one is, you know, banning the trade actions against China, so banning Chinese cotton, increasing the duties on products from China, etc., as well as the political risk factor that one associates with China, particularly for U.S. companies, means that they have to diversify their buying outside of China. Now, this will be a more long-term trend than a short-term trend. For instance, most of the large brands would be sourcing anywhere between 20 to 40, 45% from China, and usually on the top end of this band rather than the lower end of this band. So when you're buying that quantity from China, any risk, any geopolitical risks impacts the going, you know, stability or earnings of the brands itself or the retailer. So they're also under pressure to diversify their procurement. And when you look at the world of production, unfortunately, there's only Asia which seems to shine well. Africa showed promise, but Ethiopia didn't work out. Kenya did not scale up. Central America like Nicaragua, Haiti, etc. couldn't scale up. Europe or ancillary parts to Europe like Turkey, etc. are also high cost. So literally, they have to look at other locations in Asia. Vietnam is more expensive. Cambodia is growing very fast. And so is India and Indonesia, and Bangladesh continues to grow. So it's these regions which are the only ones left for a buyer or a large brand. Now, apparel trade itself is approaching 500 billion. So when you have 500 billion worth of goods to be produced, you need large manufacturing centers. And if there are good players in India who can step up to the plate, then, you know, you can get business. So from a larger strategic perspective, I don't see getting business or growth is a challenge. The challenge is really how do you set up capacity, how do you ensure that your execution is flawless. In this business, since you are producing a wide variety of goods and goods are continuously changing, I am not producing one type of garment for, you know, from January to December. The product type is continuously changing in the factory, so are the raw materials used to make the product. So if we are able to handle the SKUs, handle variety in the factory, and yet, you know, order after order after order, do a timely delivery, on-time in full delivery, I think, you know, there is no challenge to your ability to grow from a business volume standpoint. It's only a execution challenge which will govern how much you can grow.
Thank you. We'll move to the next question from the line of Nilesh Jethani from BOI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a great set of numbers. So my first question is on the overall capex plan we had. Some few quarters back we were envisaging around 300-350 crores kind of a capex. So I believe three units are already being set up. So wanted to understand how much capex is planned in this new upcoming knitwear and the MP capacity. What balances not announced, when that can happen in future, and what is the asset turnovers we can expect on the overall 300-350 crores capex?
So overall asset turnover, as I said, is you know, will remain at about 4 to 4.5 times. You know, the capex envisaged in FY23 is close to 160 crores. 20 crores is modernization capex. So you know, for productivity improvement in existing units, you know, automation, etc. about 70 crores of that capex will go into the fabric processing unit, which we will be setting up in FY23, and that will go into production only in FY24. And another 70 crores will go into garment manufacturing capacities that we will set up, which includes Madhya Pradesh and any other facility that we are still work in progress. There will be some amount of it which will also go into Bangladesh. All put together, 70 crores.
Got it, sir. And one last question from my side. Just clarification. So I heard we can, there is scope to improve EBITDA margin further by 1.5%. It is on the Q4 exit rate or the FY22 base?
FY22 base, and that is a 2.5 year time frame to do that. In the short term, there could be ups and downs because of, volatility in raw material prices. So I'm talking of annual, we will try to maintain that trajectory. Be some small hiccups here or there, but those will all get evened out through the year if there is any exceptional volatility. Otherwise, we will still maintain. We will try to maintain that over the annual level of FY22.
Thank you.
And I'm not factoring in the ESOP cost in this for the moment.
We'll move to the next question from the line of Tejas Mehta from Omkara Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for taking my question. Just a couple of quick questions. Are you a bit worried about the U.S. market slowing down? Because last quarter, the U.S. market has shown about a dip in their GDP growth. And sooner or later, people are expecting a sort of a recession coming over there. So are you likely to see any demand impact, and how would you try to offset that?
Right. So these things can happen, right? We are, that's why in my opening remarks I did mention that, there are headwinds and tailwinds, right? So there are challenges. The world is pretty volatile as we speak. U.S. Interest rates are expected to go up. U.S. inflation is high. Even U.K. inflation is almost at a 200-year high. So there are all these factors which can result in disposable income with the people may be coming down, people may reduce their spend. We've not seen that as much at the moment, but who knows, a year from 9 months from now, 6 months from now, how things will be. So we are keeping a very close view or a close watch on some of those numbers. The way to mitigate this is as follows. Try to diversify your customer base as much as possible. So in the event that, one customer experiences a lower sale, then at least you have the possibility of working with another customer to go in with more high fashion products so that there is a bit of a price inelasticity there, and you are able to still push those products through to the market. We are doing both of that. I'm also hoping that, after 2 years of lockdown, when knit and home, casual wear was going up and up during this period, we could perhaps see some amount of resurgence in woven products, because people will start going back to offices, people will start attending social functions. So if there is, a need to refresh your wardrobe, at least some amount of spends will go into woven garments, buying those garments which are meant for social occasions. So we may see some tailwind for us, but the headwinds are indeed there in the major market of US and Europe. We are watching it, and we are trying to diversify ourselves away from it. We are hoping that eventually the markets will work itself out.
Great. And just one more question, sir. So do we have a medium term or say a long-term target to kind of reach a 15% kind of an EBITDA margin? And if that's the case, then what will it take for us to be able to reach that kind of a margin?
I feel that, as I said earlier, 1.5% growth over the current levels in the longer term is a definite possibility. And when I say current levels, I'm saying FY22 levels. There will always be, short-term related issues where if there is a drastic increase or, sudden volatile increase in raw material prices or something like that, it may impact a quarter or so. But overall, the trend will be about 1.5%. I don't think going up to 15 is realistic at today's level, we will surely work towards a higher and higher profit margin. We are very conscious of the product types that we choose to produce or choose to take so that we are able to deliver a higher margin. So we are very conscious of that. What can come in the way is only very sharp movements in raw material prices, which at a very, very short term, we may not be able to pass it on. Unlikely at the moment, the way I see it, because we have been able to push everything back and the customers have been also able to take it up in their costing. So you know, our business cannot grow very sharply. It'll whatever movements will happen gradually only. So we will try to protect our EBITDA margin for sure. We'll see if we can grow it, but 15% seems high.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Agarwal from Prithvi Finmart. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, sir, I want to know what the reason exactly to set up a facility in Bangladesh compared to India. So how the environment and all.
So we do have all our facilities are currently in south of India. We wanted to diversify ourselves outside of that, and that's one of the reasons why we went to Madhya Pradesh and were setting up a factory there. We wanted to diversify our production base even more, and that's one of the reasons why we are looking at Bangladesh. Bangladesh has got a very robust garment manufacturing industry. Worker availability is strong, and our ability to grow there will be faster simply because of the established ecosystem there and the government support that we get there. So that's one of the reasons. So diversification, ability to grow faster, access to European markets, as hitherto Bangladesh has enjoyed duty-free access to Europe. So several of these factors meant that, you know, we thought we would need a footprint in that location to take advantage of some of these.
Okay, so can you say that because we are not catered to European market because of cost advantages Bangladesh have, so that's why we are planning to set up a facility in Bangladesh?
As I said, that is one of the reasons, but the other reason is also because we can probably set up a factory faster and ramp up faster there, as the prevailing ecosystem is very robust there. So worker availability is, you know, mid-management availability is strong in Bangladesh, as the industry has evolved much more in that country.
Okay. And sir, one more thing, are we planning to explore opportunity at technical textile?
At the moment, it's only in a thought stage, but no.
Okay, sir. Done from my end. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankit Dixit, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Ankit. Go ahead.
Hello. Sir, I want to know that what is the demand scenario going forward in the U.S. market and the recession we are listening that recession could become in the next 6 months. So I just want to know. And with the FTA with UK and Australia and UAE, what would be our revenue going forward?
Okay. So I did talk about the U.S. inflation just, you know, 5 minutes back. U.S. inflation is here to stay. It can be a risk factor for the industry as a whole. Why only apparel industry? For anybody who is exporting anything to the U.S. But that said, you know, we are taking mitigating measures by trying to diversify our customer base within U.S. as well as outside of U.S. As far as FTA with Europe, FTA goes, I view Australia and UAE as very, very small markets. A population of Australia will be less than that of Bombay or maybe that size. So you can imagine, you know, how much of apparel consumption will happen. Whereas, you know, UK is a much larger market and a well-paying market. We are hopeful of the FTA with UK getting concluded by end of this year, which would mean opening up a very large opportunity. And more importantly, UK becomes a forerunner for opening up FTA with Europe. And if that happens, that opens a very, very large market for India. So FTAs with UK and Europe is the most critical one that to watch out for, which will open up a large market for the country. Automatically, we will start focusing more and more on those sub-segments from a growth standpoint, as it does bring in a huge arbitrage potential for all of us.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Mohammed Rafiuddin, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Congratulations for the good set of numbers. Most of my questions have already been answered. But a question on the long-term horizon, 3 years to 5 years, and actually $1 billion was in my mind. But are there any milestones you wish to touch when you go to the number, something like a dividend policy, something like promoter shareholdings going up, something like those?
So I don't want to speak up for shareholding, in the company. But at the moment, I think, the milestones that we are always looking out for are all the, financial milestones and operating milestones. And so far, I think we are well on course for decent growth.
Would you be continuing to be at a net debt level to be negative, like the way you are currently?
Say that again. Net debt level? Okay.
Negative?
Yeah. For the current year, as of 31st March, we have net debt as a cash surplus 119 crores. For FY23, we anticipate we'll end up with a 50 crores surplus.
Okay. Any other landmark that you have, I'm asking this from a long-term investor point of view, that would excite us?
So the way I see it is that the market is very big, right? Apparel exports are huge. The opportunity, the slow and steady decline of China and is here to stay. So that's also a factor to keep in mind. And, China still is 10x that of India or at least 8x that of India. And anything that comes out of China will be huge for incremental growth in India. So that opportunity exists. Apparel trade or apparel consumption is not going to come down anytime soon as, the world's population is only growing from 7 billion, it will touch 8 billion. So there will be lot more apparel purchase and emerging economy. We sell to almost 50 countries. So as emerging economies also grow with, grow in GDP terms, I think, consumption will only go up. So the long-term prognosis is strong for apparel consumption. From a production standpoint or supply standpoint, the story for India is strong. Government of India is supportive of this sector. That is why I think they have given a clear announcement of, holding ROSCTL for till FY24, making those policy announcements, working on FTA with several countries. So government is intent on supporting this sector. They want to support manufacturing. They see this as a segment or a sector which will also help the country socially as it generates a lot of employment. And the last and most important point is that you will also find that this segment is also consolidating with suppliers who are strong. So people like us who have the ability to keep investing in sustainability, et cetera, will also tend to prosper in the long term. So there is a bit of supplier consolidation going on, consolidation towards India, which gives presence and opportunity to India, but more so for the larger players in India. So that long-term story is intact. I don't see a disruption to that anytime for the next 7 years or 10 years. There is no other country in the horizon which can pick up that slack from China. So, and Chinese population is also aging. And you need, as a workman, you need younger people who will work in this. So this is a non-strategic industry for them. So more and more has to get produced outside. Indonesia could be one, India could be one, Bangladesh will continue to grow, but there aren't too many countries outside of the three or four that I mentioned. So the prognosis is good.
Thank you, sir. That was the last question. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
Thank you. So clearly, the way I see it is that, we have our team has done a great job in navigating pretty choppy waters in FY22. We started the year with a delta wave of COVID, which shut down our factories. In early January, we had Omicron, which also resulted in a lot of our workers reporting sick for quite some time. So we did have some production impact. So all of these are, you know, the year was characterized by lot of challenges. Supply chain remained a challenge. Raw material prices was stubbornly high, and you know, resulted in us having to sit and had lot of discussions with suppliers, buyers, etc. So this volatile environment I anticipate continuing in FY23 for a whole lot of new reasons as well. One is inflation, the other is war in Europe, etc. So we need to stay focused. We need to stay close to the ground to offset any negative event that may come our way. Some amount of volatility can be expected because of reasons which is completely outside our control. But the long-term prognosis for this industry is strong. Our own company has got a good order book, so we do have some good degree of visibility in terms of growth and stability in our business. We hope to capitalize on it and build upon it. At the moment, we are holding on to our capex plans and continuing with it, so we seem comfortable going ahead with those plans for growth. If there are any short-term further impacts, we will obviously react immediately to those events. For now, you know, I take comfort from the 2-3 year trajectory that the industry, you know, is poised with, and the opportunities that I see for a larger, high-performance player like us. And we, you know, I feel confident that as shareholders, you will have, you know, you can see some good progress in the years to come.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of Gokaldas Exports, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you. Bye-bye.